Vishayo manavo deva manuputra mahaujasaha kalasa reharir eva sapra japatayasmitaha. Of course, harir is there in this. So translation, all the rishis, manus, demigods, and the descendants of manu who are especially powerful are plenary portions or portions of the plenary portion of the Lord. This is also true of the Prajapatis. Okay. I'm now turning off my phone. Okay, so now I'll read the purport here. Purport was Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Those who are comparatively less powerful are called Vibhuti, and those who are comparatively more powerful are called Avesh, incarnations. Okay, any questions? Very short purport. So we discuss some more things. Actually, I didn't look up the exact definition, but in chapter, what's the chapter? Chapter 10 of Bhagavad Gita is called Vibhuti Yoga. And those different incarnations are called Vibhuti Mat Sattva. Vibhuti Mat Sattva. So, there Krishna says, amongst fish, I am the monarch. Okay. Amongst immovable things, I am bodies of water. Something like that. Amongst fish, I am the shark. Amongst bodies of water, I am the ocean. Like that. Yeah. And so these are specific energetic incarnations. It's more like pantheism. Like that, yeah. And then the avesha, avesh means dress. Right? So avesha means they're specifically clothed with a function. Like Lord Buddha was a Shakti, he had the power, was bathed with the power, dressed with the power to convert the atheists into theists. The Kumaras have Shakti Avesh of knowledge, wisdom. Narada Muni has Shakti Avesh for bhakti potency. So the vibhuti is like more like just general, general energetic nature. Amongst animals, I am the lion. But a Shakti Avesh avatar is specifically empowered personality like that. But they're not direct expansions of Krishna. They can be jiva souls given specific powers. So, I'm going to go now. So I didn't do a PowerPoint here because the connection wasn't good enough. But we have here, that's not it, okay. We go here to the, yeah. Then if we look at this chapter, Krishna. Yeah. Krishna is the source of all incarnations. Because in general, the point is, that the whole basis of all of this is that once upon a time in Naimisharanya, these sages were trying to do good for the welfare of all human beings. So they were doing fire sacrifices. They thought this would be good. But it wasn't working because Kali Yuga had started and Agnihotra is not the religion. So then what do? They approached an authority and they judged Suta Goswami for certain reasons, which they mentioned before they started asking questions. This is kind of a universal principle in education, in the Bhagavatam, is that before you ask questions to the teacher, first off, you put him in perspective, you explain your attitude. We're asking you these questions because of this, because of this, because of this. And so by glorifying, illuminating, fixing the attitude towards the speaker, then the speaker knows what he's supposed to talk about. He knows the kind of people that are asking him and what aspect of his particular nature they want to take advantage of. So then they asked him, how does the Lord manifest himself through his energies in this world? All these different dharmas, what's the essence of all these dharmas? What's the essence of all these scriptures? What is the character of the different incarnations? And specifically, what is the character of Krishna and Krishna's incarnation and the significance? So he answers most of those questions in the second chapter. And then the third chapter then is here, especially is about the incarnations. So, verses 1 through 5, he's discussing the Purusha avatar. And this is, specifically the incarnations of Krishna who deal with the material world in a kind of maintenance fashion. For us, the analogy of a prison is very good, because in the government, there'll be somebody who's the minister of prisons. There's a minister of recreation, parks, minister of defense, minister of education, like that. And then also maybe there's some minister of Department of Corrections, prisons. So that's like, of course, Karanadakshaya Vishnu. And then he sends to one place cement, steel, glass, a blueprint, like that. And then the actual prison is built with the walls and different divisions for different kind of people, cooking place, maximum security, minimum security. Then he enters into it, he expands himself, and enters into it as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. So Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is the soul of this universe. He makes the universe alive. It's like our soul makes this body alive. Then to keep track of every single prisoner, because they all come with their independent desires and ambitions, there's Shirdakshaya Vishnu. And he has television cameras everywhere, so many expansions, walking the halls and making sure everything's okay, you know. So these are the Purusha avatars, and they're discussed in chapters, verses 1 through 5. And it says that from this, from the Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, second manifestation, okay, from Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, comes all the incarnations. So it seems they exist in the spiritual world. They have their own planets, some of them. But when they come to the material world, they pass through Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. And so then after that, we heard texts numbers 6 through 25, which is discussing all the specific incarnations, you know, Vamana, Nrisimha, Varaha, and Buddha. And on down until yesterday's verse, what's happening here? My dear robot. Please go down the page. Yeah. So yesterday we had verse 26, I guess. 25 talks about Kalki. And 26 says, O Brahmanas, the incarnations of the Lord are innumerable, innumerable, like rivulets flowing from inexhaustible sources of water. And so Prabhupada quotes him there, this verse. He said a verse from Brahma Samhita explains that Krishna is the fountainhead of all these incarnations. And so that verse is Ramadi Murta Shukala Niyame Natistan Nana Vatara Makaro Bhuvanesha Kintu Krishna Swayam Samabhava Paramam Pumamjo Govindamari Purusham Tamaham Vajami. So it's a nice verse to memorize. We use it a lot. And it establishes that Govinda is the source of all the incarnations, like Ram and others, like that. Yeah. So the Bhagavatam, really, because the different Puranas talk about Shiva, and they give worship of him. They talk about Devi. They talk about Ganesh. You know, so many different personalities. Historically, all over the world, as far as our readings and classical literature and everything else goes, there's always great appreciation for the sun. And the sun being an incarnation of God, being the all-powerful, like that. Okay, but the sun is a representation. Is the sun a Vibhuti incarnation, or is he an Avesh incarnation? Maybe Vibhuti, I don't know. But he's a very powerful personality. And so all these different incarnations, explanations, the Bhagavatam is really focusing this place to try to identify Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Supreme Personality of Divinity. Like that. So these three verses, is it 26 through 28, then talk about the best of all these incarnations in the list. O Brahmanas, the incarnations of the Lord are innumerable, like rivulets flowing from inexhaustible sources of water. All the rishis, Manus, demigods, and descendants of Manu, who are especially powerful, are plenary portions, or portions of the plenary portions. This also includes the Prajapatis. In 28, which is of course considered to be the Paribhasa Sutra of Srimad Bhagavatam, the essential text. Ete chamsa sakal pumsam, Krishnas tu Bhagavan swayam. Invyari vyakalam lokam nudiyanti yuge yuge. All the above mentioned incarnations are either plenary portions or portions of the plenary portions of the Lord. But the Lord is the original personality of Godhead. All of them appear on planets whenever there is a disturbance created by the atheists. The Lord incarnates to protect the theists. Yeah. So I think the terms here are kala and anga, and one means a more intimate portion. So for example, is it Balaram expands himself as the Chaturvyuh? They expand themselves again as a second Chaturvyuh, and then they expand themselves as Aniruddha, Pradyumna, Shankara, and Vasudev in the material world. So these are all kala, you know, portions of portions. And each one displays different levels of you know, of course, of the potency of Swayam Bhagavan. What is it? Narayan is 92%, Shiva is 84%, and Jiva has 78%. Now, when I read that at the very beginning, just becoming a devotee and, you know, visiting the temple, I was confused because it says that Krishna has, you know, innumerable, unlimited, this is immeasurably much more power than we do. So how could we have 78% of the power of Krishna? But then finally I figured out what it means is that Krishna has 64 principal qualities. And out of those, we can have 50. You know, we can, you know, one of the qualities of Narayan is you can create universes. Well, we're never going to have that. You know? So 50 is 78% of 64. Okay. So we can have 78% of the qualities qualitatively, not quantitatively. Then beyond that, Prabhupada says by developing those, that 78%, we can become Brahma, we can go back to the spiritual world. So actually we can look at the list, it's nice, to see how much we're actually developing those qualities, you know, and then we're qualified to serve in Vaikuntha like that. So, oh, what else? Yes, sir. Oh yeah. And Prabhupada says, with a general test, who remembers now? Stop here. Anybody remember? Test yourself. What is a general test of if somebody is an avatar or not? So Prabhupada says it's that the avatars show different pastimes, activities, and qualities that are impossible for an ordinary human being, like lifting Govardhan Hill when you're 8 years old on the little finger of your left hand, you know? Or taking the form of a giant boar or a giant fish. You know? So like this, even like Lord Chaitanya converting so many people to pure love of God, you know, no other incarnation has done this. You know? So that's kind of a summary, 1 through 28. Then after that, it kind of gives a general description of comparison of these incarnations with matter, with Brahman, in a kind of a broader perspective to our reading like that. So we can understand that the incarnations are not material, they're spiritual. But beyond them is, of course, is the original personality of Godhead. And 29 says that you hear these every day, Prabhupada says, whoever carefully recites the mysterious appearances of the Lord with devotion in morning and evening gets relief from all miseries of life. So very powerful, you know, powerful benedictions for hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and chanting the holy names. Then, what is it here, 40 to 44 at the very end, then talk about Srimad Bhagavatam being the literary incarnation of God. So that's very important for us. And Prabhupada identifies Lord Chaitanya as being the, what's he call him? The ideal preacher of Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srimad Bhagavatam is to the core of all that we're doing. And of course, we're receiving it through Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya. And then by, you know, Parampara, Vishnu Chakravarti, Jiva Goswami, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and finally, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And His disciples who are taking this up, His students who are taking it very seriously, they also can connect us to the Bhagavatam. Because there's so many ways, you know. We're always impressed with the statement by Vrindavan Das Thakur. He said, my only ambition is to study Srimad Bhagavatam life after life with Lord Nityananda as my teacher. So, I know that, Prabhu. I've read that. It's just, even going over a little bit, you know, becomes so important. We could have discussed this thing, we could have looked up the actual references on Vibhuti. A lot of these things about the incarnations and everything else are in the Sanatana Shiksha, the instructions to Sanatana Goswami. Chapter 20, 21, 22, 23, I think, of the, what is that? those chapters. Yeah, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majalila. Majalila is like about four chapters. Chapter 19 is the instructions to Rupa Goswami. And the next four chapters, I think, are instructions to Sanatana Goswami. And Lord Chaitanya there goes into a lot of detail about Vibhuti, Mat, Sattva, Kala, Anga, all these different expansions like that. But here, because it's a short verse, but it mentions the Manus and the descendants of Manu. So in detail, those are mentioned in the eighth canto, like that. And from our own Padma course, our course for Bhakti Vaibhava for the first six cantos, we have a summary we do in the very beginning of the course. And where is it here? Yeah, it's on my screen. And so we went through and analyzed. Actually, 1 year, what happens is myself and one disciple, Talasi Charana Sevita Das, who's a elementary school teacher, a scholar. Then with some other devotees, we decided we would do one canto a month, you know, for the year. And that would go through the whole Bhagavatam in a little more detail. So after, I think, 2 months, everybody had, like, you know, given up except myself and Talasi. And sometimes I wanted to give up. And he said, no, let's go on. Okay, so we went on. Sometimes he wanted to give up. And I said, no, let's go on. So to my experience, you know, a study partner is essential. Really appreciating the teacher and the text like that. So after we went through it, you start to see there was kind of like a structure. And I tried to write it down. And then went back through it and tried to write it out again. And finally, by the time we got to like the fifth revision, we got something which is pretty accurate, you know. And basically, of course, the idea is the first two cantos are Krishna's lotus feet. Then from cantos three through nine, it's all based upon Manu Katha. And tenth canto is, of course, Krishna. 11th canto is dynasties after Krishna, descendants of Manu after Krishna. In chapter 12, canto 12, is a summary of Srimad Bhagavatam, the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam, like that. And Maharaj Pariksit retires timely, is in 11 to 12. So very systematic. And then 3 through 9 is all based upon the Manus, because Maharaj Pariksit wants to know about all the different Manus and their worship of Krishna. And he wants to hear about the different sages and brahmanas who occurred or appeared during each different Manvantara, age of Manu. So 3 through 7 is all about the Swayambhuva Manu, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And of course that is Devahuti, Akuti, Prasuti, Uttanapada, and Priyavrata. And that's the way they appear in the Bhagavatam. Yeah. Devahuti married Kardama, had a beautiful son named Kapila. Devahuti and Akuti. Akuti is in the fourth canto, this one chapter. She married Ruchi and had a boy and girl who were an incarnation of Lakshmi and Narayan. And then after that, Uttanapada, I think he starts in also in the fourth canto. Somewhere there. Dhruva Maharaj is somewhere there. Yeah, because Uttanapada then was the father of Dhruva. Then it goes on down, and then the fifth canto is Priyavrata. Sixth canto goes back to Dhruva, and his line all the way down, and that kind of finishes that off. Then in the eighth canto, Maharaj Pariksit says, okay, we've heard exhaustively about Swayambhuva Manu and all the different incarnations that occurred during his life and the life of his descendants. What about the other 13 Manus? So canto 8, chapters 1 through 4, discuss the first four Manus. And chapters 5 through 12 discuss Manus 5 and 6. And during the first four is a story of Gajendra. Gajendra occurs because of this discussion of these first two Manus. And then chapters 5 and 6, you know, the occurrence of Korma Avatar, a tortoise, and Mohini Murti occur. Chapters 13 through 14 are Manus 8 through 14. And finally, 15 through 24 in the end discuss Bali Maharaj and Vamanadev in more detail, and also Matsya. Yeah, you know? So later on, there's so much detail, a discussion of these different Manus, Then finally, in the end of Canto 8, he starts talking about our Manu, Vaivasvata Manu, who's in the middle of the day. And then the conclusion is they can't talk anymore about this. It's kind of confidential, whatever. But he asks for more. Okay. So then the ninth canto is Vaivasvata Manu and all of his descendants. And chapters 1 through 3 is Vaivasvata Manu was the father of Ila, and from him comes the story of Sukanya and Chaivamuni. It goes on to Maharaj and Nabi. 4th and 5th chapters is the story of Ambarish Maharaj and this chakra, Sudarshan chakra chasing Duramasa Muni. 6 through 12 talks about Vaivasvata Manu was the father of Ikshvaku, was the father of Subhara Muni, who went for a long time to Maharaj Sagar, and finally came down to Ramchandra. The Surya Vamsa. And 14 through 24 is the how Ila, who's you know the son of Vaivasvata Manu, was the father of Pururava, who much later became the father of Yadu, and that dynasty appeared Krishna and Balaram, and the Purus and the Kurus. Okay. So like inexhaustible rivulets, right? He's describing like that. No, like inexhaustible streams branching from it. And innumerable streams branching through inexhaustible reservoirs of water. You know? So somebody said, you know, told Prabhupada, show me God, sarcastically. And Prabhupada laughed and said, show me something that isn't God. With so many incarnations, everything else, you know, how are we going to not become God conscious? And of course, this age is Lord Chaitanya's incarnation, and he's engaging us in the Yuga Dharma. And also he's giving us an opportunity to appreciate his internal consciousness, you know, appearing in the mood of Radharani and everything else like that. You know? So, what else have we got here? Okay, the database. Oh, yeah. So one more thing. So next verse is actually this, the real concentrated verse. And nice purport, so tomorrow somebody get a nice class. We're traveling tomorrow. We'll actually be on the airplane. We're in the airport. Maybe about 10:30. Maybe not. Oh, no, Friday. I'll say Friday. Friday we have our South American class. So if you look at the second canto, second chapter of the Adi Lila, it's talking about Lord Chaitanya. First chapter is about the gurus, you know, who's a guru and their qualifications. Then the second chapter of Adi Lila is about Lord Chaitanya as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Krishna Das Kaviraj gives so many verses and everything else to establish Krishna and to begin, I guess, to show that Lord Chaitanya is a self-same Krishna. Then, when he's discussing this, he comes to kind of a little argument because he has somebody may say, well, no, Krishna is not the incarnate Supreme Lord. He's a very nice incarnation. But really, the Supreme Lord is Narayan, Shriman Narayan. So, you know, there are even little arguments with different people about the importance or relative importance of different incarnations, you know? And to support his claim that Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that he is Krishna who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he quotes different verses. But then finally when he comes down to this verse, remember Adi Lila chapter 2, text 66, it says, the import of this verse, previous verse, has stopped you from arguing. Now listen to another verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is Adi Lila 2:67. And the verse is, Ete Chamsa Sakal Pum Sam. All these incarnations are plenary portions or portions, but Sri Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God himself. So after this is kind of a nice dialogue. And Krishna Das Kaviraj says, the Bhagavatam describes the symptoms and deeds of the incarnations in general and counts Sri Krishna among them. This made Suta Goswami greatly apprehensive. Therefore, he distinguished each incarnation by its specific symptoms. All the incarnations, next verse says, all the incarnations of Godhead are plenary portions or parts of the plenary portions of the Purusha, avatars. But the primeval Lord is Sri Krishna. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the fountainhead of all incarnations. An opponent may say, this is your interpretation, but actually the Supreme Lord is Narayan, who is in the transcendental realm. He, Narayana, incarnates as Lord Krishna. This is the meaning of the verse as I see it. There is no need to further discuss it. There is no need for further consideration. To such a misguided interpreter, we may reply, why should you suggest such fallacious logic? All an interpretation can never be accepted as evidence if it opposes the principles of Scripture. One should not state a predicate before its subject. I guess kind of like it's like eat I, walk I. You say I walk, I eat, I run. Eat I, walk I, run I. Okay. He's quoting some here. Some probably look at the purport. Probably will give some authority from some standard grammar. So it says, one should not state a predicate before its subject, for it cannot thus stand without proper support. He goes on saying, if I do not state a subject, I do not state a predicate. First I speak the former, then I speak the latter. So it's like, so we don't say run, eat, walk. You know, we say I eat, you eat, he eats, she eats. Now, of course, we're talking to somebody, we're telling them in an emphatic sense, you walk, you run. That's a different story. One should not state a predicate before its subject, for it cannot thus stand without proper support. If I do not state the subject, I do not state a predicate. First I speak the former, and then I speak the latter. The predicate of a sentence is what is known to the reader, whereas the subject is what is known to him. Okay. For example, we may say, this Vipra is a greatly learned man. In this sentence, the Vipra is the subject and the predicate is his erudition. The man's being a Vipra is known, but his erudition is unknown. Therefore, the person is identified first and his erudition later. Okay. In the same way, all these incarnations are known. But whose incarnations they are was unknown. First, the word ete, these, establishes the subject, the incarnations. Then, plenary portions of the Purusha avatars followed as a predicate. In the same way, when Krishna was counted amongst the incarnations, specific knowledge about him was still unknown. Therefore, first the word Krishna appears as the subject, followed by the predicates. As the original personality of Godhead. This establishes that Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. The original personality of Godhead is therefore necessarily Krishna. Yeah. Had Krishna been the plenary portion of Narayana, the primeval Lord, the statement of Suga Goswami would have been reversed. Thus he would have said, Narayana is the source of all incarnations. Narayana, the source of all incarnations, is the original personality of Godhead. He is a pure Sri Krishna. 286. Mistakes, illusions, cheating, and defective perceptions do not occur in the sayings of authoritative sages. You say something contradictory and become angry when I point this out. Your explanation has a defect of a misplaced object. This is an unconsidered adjustment. Only the personality of Godhead, the source of all other divinities, is eligible to be designated as Swayam Bhagavan, or the primeval Lord. When from one candle many others are lit, I consider that one to be the original. Krishna, in the same way, is a cause of all causes and all incarnations. Please hear another verse to defeat all interpretations. This is 291-92. Here in Srimad Bhagavatam, 10 subjects are described: the creation of the ingredients of the cosmos, the creations of Brahma, the maintenance of the creation, special favor given to the faithful, impetuses for activity, prescribed duties for law-abiding men, a description of the incarnation of the Lord, and the winding up of the cosmic creation, liberation from gross and subtle material existence, and 10, the ultimate shelter, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The 10th item is The tenth item is the shelter of all others. To distinguish this ultimate shelter from the cause, from the other nine causes, the Mahajans have described these nine directly or indirectly through prayers or direct explanations. So this, I think, is in the end of the second canto. Citation. And quote, to know distinctly the ultimate shelter of everything that be, I have described the other nine categories. The cause for the appearance of these nine categories is rightly called their shelter. 294. The personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the shelter and abode of everything. All the universes rest in his body. And quote, the tenth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam reveals the tenth object, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the shelter of all surrendered souls. He is known as Sri Krishna, and he is the ultimate source of all the universes. Let me offer my obeisances unto him. This is in Krishna's Kaviraj continues. One who knows the real feature of Sri Krishna and his three different energies cannot remain ignorant about him. The personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, enjoys himself in six primary expansions. His two manifestations are Prabhava and Vaibhava. His incarnations are of two kinds, namely partial and empowered. He appeared in two ages, childhood and boyhood. The personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who is eternally an adolescent, is the pine log. Okay. The personality of Godhead, who is eternally an adolescent, is the primeval Lord, the source of all incarnations. He expands himself from these six categories to forms to establish his supremacy throughout the universe. In these six kinds of forms, there are innumerable varieties. Although they are many, they are all one. There is no difference between them. The Chitsya Shakti, which is also called Swarup Shakti or Antaranga Shakti, okay, Chit Shakti, Swarup Shakti, Antaranga Shakti, Antaranga Shakti and Bahiranga Shakti, displays many varied manifestations. It sustains the kingdom of God and its paraphernalia. The external energy called Maya Shakti is the cause of innumerable universes with varied material potencies. The marginal potency, which is between these two, consists of the numberless living entities, living beings. These are the three principal energies that have unlimited categories and subdivisions. These are the principal manifestations and expansions of the personality of Godhead and his three energies. They are emanations from Sri Krishna, the transcendence. They have their existence in him. Although the three Purushas are the shelter of all the universes, Lord Krishna is the original source of the Purushas. Thus, the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the original primeval Lord, the source of all expansions, and all the revealed scriptures accept Sri Krishna as the Supreme Lord. Krishna, who is known as Govinda, and this is 2107 here. 2107 is going to be a citation. Okay. Robot. Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the supreme controller. He has an eternal, blissful, spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, for he is the cause of all causes. Ishwara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigra Anadi Adi Govinda Sarvakarna Karanam 108, 2108. You know all the conclusions of the scriptures very well. In our argument, Krishnadas Kaviraj has taken his position, talking to an irritating atheist. You create these logical arguments just to agitate me. That same Lord Krishna, the fountainhead of all incarnations, is known as the son of the king of Raja. He has descended personally as Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya is the supreme absolute truth. To call him Shirdakshaya Vishnu does not add to his glory. But such words from the lips of sincere devotees cannot be false. All possibilities abide in him, for he is the primeval Lord. All other incarnations are situated in potential form in the original body of the primeval Lord. Thus, according to one's opinion, one may address him as any one of the incarnations. Some say that Sri Krishna is directly Narayana. Others say that he is directly Vamana. Some say that Krishna is an incarnation of Shiradakshay Vishnu. None of these statements are impossible. Each is as correct as the others. Some call him Hari or Narayan of the transcendental world. Everything is possible in Krishna, for he is the primeval Lord. I offer my obeisances under the feet of all who hear or read this discourse. Kindly hear with attention the conclusion of all these statements. So it means that Krishnadas Kaviraj is offering his obeisances to us. My goodness. We should reciprocate and say, thank you, Krishnadas Kaviraj, for producing such a wonderful book. I guess it wasn't actually easy just to write Chaitanya Charitamrita. What is the conclusion? A sincere student should not neglect the discussions of such conclusions, considering them controversial, for such discussions strengthen the mind. Thus one's mind becomes attached to Krishna. So we shouldn't be afraid of like sincere, honest arguments about things, because they make the mind strong. That's a good aspect of what Krishna consciousness is debating and discussing ideas like that. By such conclusive study, I know the glories of Lord Chaitanya. Only by knowing these glories can one become fixed and strong in attachment to him. So use our knowledge to understand Krishna's position, potency, and once we have that, then we feel comfortable in the surrendering to him that we'll be okay. Just to enunciate the glories of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I have tried to describe the glories of Sri Krishna in detail. The conclusion is that Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, the son of the King of Raja, praying at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Raghunath, always desiring their mercy. I, Krishnadas, narrate Chaitanya Charitamrita, following their footsteps. So Prabhupada ki jai. So it's kind of like
Raghunath.
Yeah, okay, we have a question. One second here, then. So that's kind of going to finish here, and we're going to then, I guess, it's our presentation that this verse is part of three verses, which are then summarizing all these incarnations and saying that there are innumerable incarnations, but making a very strong case that Krishna is the source of all incarnations. Yeah? Otherwise, you can say that all incarnations, I have to reverse the predicate. All incarnations Krishna is, or something. So he's saying it's a rather useless was the word, like jugglery of words to put in that sense. And the sense is very clear and very simple, that Krishna is the source of all incarnations, and everybody else with any kind of potency, everything else, which we see in this world, we see nice things, beautiful things, powerful things, and they're all like a portion or a plenary portion of Krishna. So I guess at this point we can ask for any kind of questions or comments, and right away we have a question or comment by Hari Luladas here. Okay.
No, I'm saying that the Rupa, and he mentioned Rupa and Raguna, one is Siksha and one is Diksha Guru.
So at the end of the chapter, end of every chapter, he says Rupa Raghunatha Pade Hoi Beyakuti Kamihama Bujamo. Yeah. So Haridas' question is whether one is Diksha Guru and one is Shiksha Guru. So, I guess in our line, Rupa Goswami is kind of like the Diksha Guru there. He's mentioned as being simultaneous with, let's see, Srup Damodar and Ramana Roy are simultaneous. Even after that, Rupa Goswami was disciple of, actually Raghunath Das Goswami was Shiksha disciple of Srup Damodar. And Rupa Goswami also didn't take any Diksha for many of them, but he was giving Diksha. You know, so maybe they're both. I mean, Raghunath Das also may be getting Diksha, after Raghunath comes Krishnadas Kaviraj. And Krishnadas Kaviraj is not Diksha Guru of any of them. He's a Shiksha disciple of Raghunath, and he heard from Raghunath these past times and wrote them. Yeah. So everybody in our Sampradaya is, what's the word, is like initiated, but the Sampradaya itself is mostly a Shiksha Sampradaya like that. So anybody else have any comments, questions like that? You must have innumerable questions, like different inexhaustible rivulets flowing from inexhaustible.
Well, Maharaj, I was going, not actually a question so much, but I was going to really appreciate how just yesterday I again asked the same question about what is the significance of the Manus. And you answered it in such a way that I can't believe it, because I haven't read or studied the entire Bhagavatam like you have. And you explain how through all the different cantos, all these different Manus, are their significance and their pastimes and everything in connection with them are all listed there. I wasn't even aware of it, you know, because it's so vast, you just get lost. That was a wonderful, wonderful explanation. I really want to go back and re-listen to this class and listen to how you've summarized the Bhagavatam, how it's broken down. It was really great.
And that's kind of a didactic device. Specifically, the Manus are just part of this whole, you know, administrative thing like that. And they're, it's interesting because I read it, I understood that the Manus come, I would say, right under Brahma as administrators. There's Brahma. The next level of administration is the Manus. And so with every change of Manu, there's a change of the Indra. The Indra changes. You know? The demigods change. The Vayu, the Agni. The seven Rishis change. And what else we got? Yeah, so like that. So basically the Manu is actually the person who's really in charge of the universe, and under him are the Indras and everybody else like that.
Yeah. Marsha, I have a question. I learned, well, always learning something new, but especially in a recent class we were discussing about Lord Buddha, and it came out that Lord Buddha, as you mentioned today, was in fact a Shaktivesh avatar. And I don't know why, and that's my question, is why for so many years was I, as well as other senior Prabhupada disciples, under the misconception that Buddha was in fact Vishnu Tattva? I realize now that's apparently wrong.
I'm myself a little bit unclear about, you know, Buddha and the avatars and incarnations like that, but I, you know, if somebody went through it more specifically, but here it's saying in yesterday's verse it says a Buddha. But see, the word Buddha, and Mother Gandhari was saying that there's two Buddhas, you know, that are kind of mentioned in the Bhagavatam. Also, it's mentioned that Buddha will come and stop the atheists who are flying on airplanes to different planets and killing people. And then the purport Baba said this is a Buddha in a different Kali Yuga. Okay. So there's different variety of Buddhas. The actual word Buddha itself, following the authority here of Radhika Raman Das, professor of comparative theology from, what you call it, William and Mary College from Oxford. Yeah. He said the word Buddha means, is used by Buddhists to mean any kind of enlightened guy. For example, there's Tathagata Buddha, which means he's gone there. Gata, the goal. Tathagata, he's gone. The Buddha who's gone there, like that. And so I think he's also the Sakyamuni Buddha, you know. And they're coming to see him in Journey from the West. This big classic. But beyond that, there's a very famous Buddha called Amitabha Buddha, who's the Buddha of the West. And he's the one we hear about because he talks about the holy names. So before he became a Buddha, he said, if when I become a Buddha, I don't create Sukhavati, the pure land, where there's no death, where there's no suffering, where there's no inimical behavior between people, then I don't want to become a Buddha. And he gives a whole list like that, you know. Then he says something like about that. Anybody who calls my name at the time of death, I come and take them to Sukhavati. So there's a variety of different Buddhas. One time we were in Golden Gate Park. I was chanting my rounds, and there was like some kind of oriental gardener there, you know, cutting the grass, everything. And I was in Dodi and Kirti, everything. So he one time he came over and he said, "You believe Buddha?" A little challenging like that. "You believe in Buddha?" And so spontaneously I said, "Oh, yes, yes, we believe in golden Buddha." Because Lord Chaitanya is the Buddha. You know, so golden Buddha. And he said, "Oh, I never hear that Buddha." And I said, "Oh, a very good Buddha from India." I said, "Oh, okay." So yeah, Lord Chaitanya is a Buddha. Looks like one.
So was there, do you think that there was a, is there in fact a Vishnu Tattva Buddha?
There may be something like that, you know, because even, you know, there are even Vishnu Tattva Brahmas, right? Yeah. Sometimes nobody's qualified, you know. Yeah. So it's talking about Buddhas in different Kali Yugas. It's talking about, I think, as far as I understand, there's two Buddhas in this Kali Yuga who are being mentioned like that. So one of them may be like Vishnu Tattva, and the other one may be like, you know, Jiva Tattva, like that. Because yeah. I think probably it says it there. I think Prabhupada says, because also I think probably when he uses the word expansion, sometimes I think Prabhupada is not so so strict about being like Vishnu Tattva when he uses that word. Yeah. For example, say the spiritual master is an expansion of Lord Nityananda. And he uses it like that sometimes too. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know. So that's all I know. I'm also to look for the exact evidence. I haven't, you know, got that real clearly down like that.
Okay, thank you.
Maharaj, I would like to ask a question, but perhaps I'll wait to ask to see if anyone else has a question or a comment. Okay, let me put this in real quick. Nobody else is answering. I was also going to say that I had glanced over and once or twice just read that conversation with Sarvabhum Bhattacharya about the Paribhasa Sutra, and I really got lost. However, when you read it and explained it in your own simple way, it was just wonderful. For the first time, I think I've grasped it, especially when he was talking about the grammar. But when you gave the example about it, we never say, "I eat," or "eat I, stand I, walk I." You know, it sounds like Yoda speaking or something. Now it makes sense to me, that argument. You had said something or read something there that kind of went over my head. What was that about the subject is known to the author, whereas what is presented is known to the reader? In regards to the grammar that is used.
Also I got to go back and look at it, but I think it's the same thing. He's making the same point. Whether we, for example, if we say like, you say like, you know, in Spanish you put the what's known first, like you say sombrero gris, which means a gray hat, you know, like that. In English, you put the gray first, but actually it has no meaning. Gray, red, blue. Well, red, gray, blue, what? You know? We start with the big thing first, and we say like a lake. Okay, lake, big lake. You know, but actually it should be lake big. That makes more sense. So what is known first is presented first, which is the subject, and the predicate is actually a modifier like that. Yeah, yeah. It's modifying not the qualities of the subject but the activities, guna karma, the karma of the activities, like that. What's the word like? Dog runs. Yeah. Of course, you could put it away to say running dog. You know. Yeah. So it's interesting. You know. Maybe because the impersonalists would say that the quality the what do you call it? The activity should come first, maybe running, you know, because dog is also a temporary thing, but in the form of running, it's more obvious and then it's temporary. So it's clear to put the more temporary thing first. You know? And a bit of a Krishnadas Kaviraj says, "You know all these things, you're just agitating my mind." Yeah. We were with our first disciple, Raktak Das, in his sister's town in Punjab. Was it Jamuna Nagar? Something like that. And his brother-in-law and father have a sewing machine business. They manufacture sewing machines. So anyway, pretty big guy. So the main temple in the town is a Ganesh temple, you know, pretty often and pretty big. So one Ganesh appearance day, his brother-in-law arranged with the government military to have one helicopter fly over and dump flowers out at midnight or something like that. You know. So when we were there, he invited the priest to come for lunch. And we had lunch with the priest, and he was like a Brahmin guy. And then when everybody went out of the room, he said to me in Rock Talk confidentially, he said, "I know she's a devotee of Krishna. So I worship her that way." And he said, "But I don't tell anybody, or else I'm going to lose my job." You know. So this is it. Anybody who's really a Brahmana, apparently it's that obvious. If you just read the scriptures and look at them, it's that obvious that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. The demigods are his devotees and stuff like that.
Very good. Thank you, Maharaj. Does anyone else have a question for Maharaj? He covered some really amazing subject matters.
Okay, I guess we'll... Yes.
I just have a short comment. Maharaj mentioned that having a study partner is essential, and I agree. For years, I said, I haven't read the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it was almost like motto or, you know, a slogan that I would say all the time. I haven't read the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita. And a very good friend of mine, senior devotee, said, "Okay, this is it. We're going to read Chaitanya Charitamrita together, one chapter a week. And we did. We would read it, and then on Saturday, we would discuss it, and the next week, we would read it. And no matter what came up, we still had to do it, and it took 2.5 years. So I really appreciate that, Maharaj, because it's true.
Yeah, same experience. And I bet sometimes you wanted to give up, but your study partner said, "No, come on, let's go." You know. Other times your study partner wanted to get up and give it up, and you said, "No, let's go." You know? So the fortunate thing is that you both didn't want to give it up at the same time. And that's why it's good to have three people in the group even, I guess. You know?
Yeah.
So I'm on this tour. Here in Houston, we're discussing this whole Bhakti Bhai Baba program and how it's developing it. And we're going to go to San Jose. Actually, the GBC meeting is going on right now. And Hari Vilas is here, Bhadi Narayan, everybody, you know, Sesha. And so we're just passing through quickly because the administration scares us. We're too incompetent to deal with it. Like that. So we'll go to San Jose next and discuss Bhakti Bhai Baba there. Swing around to other places. But these educational programs are developing, you know. And the thing is just to make sure it remains bhakti and not just, you know, dry jnana. We always remember that the real thing is to have fun, you know, reading and studying these things. Thank you, everybody.
Maharaj.
11:30. We'll take our bath and everything else now. Uh-huh.
Maharaj, there's one other question here.
I'm sorry, I just one more question. If we have time, Harsh Prabhu is asking. He wrote it, and he can't speak right now. If I can read it quickly.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Okay, so he's asking, what does plenary mean, and how it is different from part and parcel?
Well, in English, the word plenary, many times you look at Prabhupada, he uses these things in a very classical sense, you know, like that. So in English, somebody who's an ambassador, he can be plenary potentate, ambassador. That means that if, for example, some country is attacked and the ambassador has full power to sign a declaration of war against the other country that's attacking the country he's in. If somebody's in Serbia, okay, and the Croatians attack Serbia, then a plenary potentate ambassador can sign a declaration of war on behalf of the United States of America, like that, against Croatia, like that. I don't want to, you know, what's the word like? But this is politically incorrect here. But anyway, so plenary potentate means in that sense he has full powers. So Krishna has 64 qualities, and Vishnu has 93% of those. And so what he doesn't have, where he's not actually plenary, is he doesn't have what he doesn't have surrounded by wonderful devotees. He doesn't have especially wonderful beauty. I think it's wonderful flute playing and wonderful childhood pastimes. And those are things that Narayan doesn't have. But all the power and potency, it's all there. Because, again, people think that Krishna is the one Sikh guy told me, he said, you know, Krishna, you see Krishna is God. He said, well, he is, but, you know, he had problems and he fell down with the gopis. He became confused and like that, you know. So they think that Krishna is not fully the same as Narayan. A Shaktyavesha avatar won't be a plenary expansion of the Lord. He has specific, for example, Indra. Indra is a Shaktyavesha avatar for Krishna's lusty nature. So Krishna, too, is a lusty fellow. He likes to have a very beautiful, good-looking girlfriend, nice car, good food, you know, nice things to hear about, nice stories. So Indra is an incarnation of that. So therefore, it's not surprising if every now and again he becomes a little confused by these things. You know? So, but he doesn't have potency like Prithu. He doesn't have potency like the Kumaras. So he's not plenary. Plenary means complete. You know? And then part and parcel, on the other hand, is just a description of the relationship of the jiva with the Supreme Lord. For example, somebody may say, paint the middle of the rope red. Okay, that's the only instruction we have. You know, maybe it's hanging across some entranceway, and they say, paint the middle of the rope red. So we know what it is, you know, but somebody may think, well, you painted a little more than the middle, or you didn't really paint the middle, you know. So you can't cut the middle of the rope out and give it to somebody and say, here's the middle of the rope. It ceases to have any kind of meaning. You know, it's not part of the rope. So it's a part of the rope. You can't separate it, but also it's a parcel. Parcel means like, you know, you divide it up into a certain size like that. Yeah. Or the corner of the room. And the corner of the room only exists because it's a part of the room. You know, so therefore it's a part of the room. You can never, you know, take it away. But simultaneously, it's not the room. It's something you can distinguish, you know. Where the boundaries are, okay, that maybe is a little bit of an argument, you know. So where Krishna's responsibility starts, for example, when you're trying to take care of your kids, Harsh has a nice little boy there. So when does your duty in taking care of him stop and Krishna's duty start? Like that. Okay, Krishna's duty, for example, is to supply air, light, and water, you know, on a universal scale. We all accept that. Right? But okay, you're responsible for supplying air, light, and heat in the apartment or something like that. So that's the kind of that boundary area is a little bit open for experimentation. And, you know, and so that way, you know, we're a part of Krishna, but also we're a parcel. You know? But we're not separate. That's a whole other idea, is that we're something completely separate. You know? So, achinta, it's inconceivable. But as we engage in devotional service to Krishna, we begin to feel like how we're like a part of him. We're like a finger or something, so he can never hate us. Because how can you hate your own fingers, you know, like that? But at the same time, too, we're a certain aspect. You know? So it's a difficult, it's an inconceivable topic, but as we advance in devotional service, it becomes clearer.
Yeah. That was wonderful, Maharaj. I think someone else had one last thing they wanted to say, but I couldn't tell who it was.
Yeah, it's Vidugda. Dandavats, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
So,
Dandavats to you.
I think it would be nice what you did today with Srimad Bhagavatam as an overview. It would be nice to see a chart or a PowerPoint presentation. It seems to be one of your strengths.
If you go on our webpage, it's there.
Oh, okay.
Jayarama.us. Prabhupada says Hanuman didn't think about what was in the opposite side. He says Jayaram and jumped. So, jayarama.us.
Okay.
And then if you look, it says archives. And if you go in the archives, I think it's down, where would it be? It'd probably be down under, alphabetically in order. What's the word? Padapadma, PDP. There's a whole bunch of files. It gives a little explanation. and you'll see, I think, two PowerPoint shows. And one of them is for the whole Bhagavatam, and the other one's for the first two cantos. Like that.
Nice.
Wonderful, Maharaj. I'll definitely look for that, and I'll post that for everybody.
There's also other weird things there, too. We're not responsible for the archives, you know. Buck White takes care of those.
Mm.
Okay, thank you very much.
J-A-Y-A?
Yeah, J-A-Y-A-R-A-M-A. So your left finger keeps hitting the A again and again. JAYARAMA.US. Because we're Americans. Okay, thank you very much. We're going to take our sandhya here. And Mother Madhavi is cooking garbanzo beans and rice downstairs for Lord Nrsingadev. And hope he shares something with us so we can maintain our bodily existence. Hare Krishna. Thank you
thank
so
you,
much.
Hi, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Jai, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Arrivo.
Arrivo.